The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. It is Wednesday, August 8th, 2018, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on this edition of Ozarks, there is more than one connection between the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota and Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich will explore those connections ahead. In just under an hour on NPR's Here and Now, primaries in four states and an Ohio special election. What do these races tell us about the upcoming midterms? And more testimony from Rick Gates in the Paul Manafort trial as the president tweets about the Trump Tower meeting. A conversation with the Here and Now political strategist this afternoon. Here and Now begins at 1, right after Ozarks at Large. In about 4.5 hours, weather permitting, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals start one of their last homestands of the summer at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Last night's game with Midland was washed away, so there is a doubleheader scheduled for today beginning at 4:45. This current homestand lasts through a Sunday afternoon game against Frisco before the Nats take a road trip to Texas next week. Fort Smith City leaders are in Texas this week to meet with the Environmental Protection Agency about the city's consent decree with the agency. That agreement came after years-long violations of the Clean Water Act and requires the city to make an estimated $480 million worth of sewer upgrades over the course of 12 years. City leaders, though, would like to see some changes made to the contract. In the meantime, the Utilities Department has been working to carry out the consent decree. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Joshua Robertson, the department's Deputy Director of Business Administration, and Lance McAvoy, the Deputy Director of Operations, about how much work their department has put in so far.
Let's start by going back in time a little bit. Can you remind us where the consent decree comes from, what led to it, and what it calls for from the city?
Somewhere in the 2000s range, 2008 to 2012, EPA felt that Fort Smith had not done enough to reduce the amount of sanitary sewer overflows due to wet weather conditions. So whenever we have a rain event, we would have manhole covers that would pop up because there would be excess water in the sanitary sewer, and it would cause the manholes to overflow. So they contacted the Department of Justice, and through a few years of negotiation, the consent decree was entered into. And what that is, it kind of spells out what we have to do with our system for repairs, maintenance, and operations. And we entered into that consent decree on January 2nd, 2015. That's when it was filed at the federal courthouse.
And since that consent decree went into effect, it's meant rate hikes for Fort Smith residents. Where does that stand? And how much are people paying now?
So to comply with the consent decree, the city hired a consultant to look at our rates that we had in 2015 and what it was going to take to comply with the consent decree. And over a period of about 2.5 years, the first one occurred in the middle of 2015, and then it was every January 2016, January 2017, sewer rates went up, and the total percentage that they went up over that time frame was 167%. And that was to fund projects, fund debt coverage using bonds to handle some of the larger projects, as well as to bring on additional resources such as equipment and staff.
So how has the city undertaken this project? How is it carrying out what's laid out in the consent decree?
Yeah, and a part of the consent decree, there were things that were, you know, kind of lined out for things for us to approach first. And then throughout the life of the consent decree, there were things to follow. So obviously we were trying, our first focus was to make sure that we had plans in place to meet the requirements of the consent decree. Some of the first things that we had to do were a lot of program development. We had to do a root control program, a gravity sewer line cleaning program, a fog control, a private service line program, and other different programs that we had to put in place, and then also just construction projects as well. Now, as far as the utility department, and under the direction of Carl Gafkin, our city administrator, was to approach these projects and try to do them, you know, to meet the requirement, but also do them the most cost-effective way as well. We really want to try to do the best that we could to approach this in a cost savings to ensure that we had continued funds to meet the requirements year after year.
So it's been about 2.5 years since the consent decree was signed and filed. So where do some of those projects stand? How much progress has the city made so far?
The first part of the year, again, was a development, you know, year. And then we've kind of been also into a period of assessment to where so far we've 160 miles of our gravity sewer lines have been assessed. There's over 508 miles of gravity sewer lines. And so with us being able to assess 160 miles so far, that's a 31% today. Through those assessments, we've also come up and have done some cleaning. So there's been 177 miles of sanitary sewer lines that have been cleaned. Lines include 9 miles of large diameter gravity lines and over 168 miles of small diameter gravity sewer lines.
We've also, on the construction side, we've undertaken repairing. So when we do an assessment, you're basically looking at the shape that the pipe is in. And depending upon the shape of the pipe depends on what you have to do. If it looks like it's brand new pipe, there's really nothing you do. You keep it clean and you keep it maintained. But if the pipe's been in the ground for 60, 70 years and it's starting to crack and part of it's broken off, we have to go in and replace that. So through this assessment, we also do what's called a remedial measure, and that's designing and implementing the construction projects fix what's broken in the system. Other things that we have begun and are ongoing and will be ongoing even beyond the life of the consent decree are things such as the fog program or fats, oils, and grease. What we're doing there is we're making sure that fog generators, usually it's a food service establishment, are properly disposing of the grease, not going into the sewer. Because what happens is it will get into the sewer, it will adhere to the side of the wall of the line, and it will close off the diameter. Think of it just as you would an artery in your heart. You have too much cholesterol, it closes it down, and that blood flow's got to go somewhere. Well, in our case, it closes off that line, and the sewage has to go somewhere, so it comes up a manhole and out onto the ground. So we've begun that project. And program. We've implemented our root control program where we're seeing roots that might grow into the lines and we're removing those.
Yeah, we also have a private service line program. And along with fog, too, both the fog and the private service line have been a big part of our customer and citizen public outreach. We have a big initiative to increase our public education and information progress on the consent decree. We just recently put out a billing insert in the billing cycles to all of our customers that gives an update on the consent decree progress. A lot of the things we just have talked about here with you. We also be doing a fog billing insert. We'll be doing some other public outreach on that side for fog. And then also for the private service line program, that's also a part of the consent decree. And that program provides education and for homeowners to see if they have any kind of defects in their private lateral lines that could cause storm runoff water to get into their private lines that in turn will get into the main system and can cause capacity issues that would cause a sanitary sewer overflow. And that's the main focus of the consent decree, is to reduce the amount of wet weather SSOs that we have. And fog and the private service line programs are a big part of that for education, for citizens to help and do their part to help reduce the amount of SSOs that we have within our city.
And when you say SSO, that stands for sanitary sewer overflows for our listeners. So what happened that the city got to this point, to the point of having a consent decree issued from the EPA?
investment in infrastructure. That's the number one cause of consent decrees around the nation, not just Fort Smith or Arkansas, but around the nation. You know, people don't think about our hidden assets, our buried assets. The pipes are in the ground. As long as they work, that's all people think about. You know, they don't think about when they turn on the tap, all of the science and work that goes into producing safe drinking water to come out of the tap. And when they flush the commode, they don't think about what all goes into it once it swirls down and is out of sight. So it's hard sometimes to get people to understand we need to have more investment in this type of infrastructure. Nationwide, it's over $200 billion is the estimated investment to renew water and wastewater infrastructure across the U.S. And every day, that dollar amount is kind of going up because things are getting older. And when I mentioned earlier that you may have a pipe that's been in the ground 50 or 60 years, the materials that were used 50 or 60 years ago aren't as durable as some of the ones that we have now. So we've actually really outlasted its lifespan being where it's at, and that's why it needs to be replaced. In the older areas of town, that's where we're seeing some of the more challenging sewer system assessments and remediation plans.
Yeah, we're also seeing a lot of the issues that we're getting from private lateral lines, from homeowners' private laterals in those areas, too. You have you know, a lot of those homes were built in early 1900s, and some of their private laterals are still what's considered an old Orangeburg lateral that causes quite a bit of what we consider infiltration and inflow that causes capacity issues. So, yes, an aging infrastructure, especially in the northern part of the city, that's where we're seeing a lot of our remediations that are needed.
Next week, Fort Smith city leaders are heading to Texas to meet with the EPA to discuss the consent decree and maybe make some adjustments. What would you like to see them adjust with that agreement?
I think the main focus of it is just more time. You know, the last three sewer increases has put a big financial burden on our customers, the citizens of Fort Smith. And it's actually above the mark that the EPA likes to see as far as, you know, sewer rates within a city. So really, we feel that the work in the consent decree is justified. We want to get it done. We just need more time to be able to do it and have the necessary funds to do it over a better period of time. It's a lot more feasible for a city of our size and that has a population with a medium household income that we do. We feel that just more time will give us the opportunity to complete the requirements and not be such a financial burden to our citizens.
You know, one thing I would like to, you know, just kind of mention is I live in Fort Smith as well. So does Joshua. A lot of our staff live in Fort Smith, and this has impacted us as well. We're a group of professionals that strive to do the best we can with the resources that we have. And just like any other industry right now, you're asked to do more with less, and we've been asked to do a lot more. We've been given some additional assets and additional resources by the citizens with this rate increase, and we're going to continue to try to be fiscally responsible. I don't like seeing what my bill went up. I don't know if Joshua enjoyed seeing the rate hike in his bill, but he's shaking his head no. So, you know, that being said, we understand, and we're just trying to fix the problem, look at creative solutions that are cost-effective and efficient so that we can proceed forward and take Fort Smith into the future.
Thank you for catching us up.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
That was Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek speaking with Joshua Robertson, the Fort Smith Utility Department Deputy Director of Business Administration, and Lance McAvoy, the Deputy Director of Operations. Ahead on this Ozarks at Large, for years there was a jukebox at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. What happened to the machine and the records inside? We'll find out in a bit. Plus, music that is live, not on a record, all over the region this weekend. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis gives us the rundown of live music through the weekend in about 12 and a half minutes.
KUAF and Fayetteville Roots Festival are giving away tickets to the culinary portion of the 2018 Fayetteville Roots Festival. Events include Roots Food and Spirits at Pratt Place Barn on August 25th and the Farm Jamboree at Tricycle Farms on August 26th. Winners announced Friday, August 17th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Register and find more information at KUAF.com. 91.3 is supported by the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring travel and tourism, including spas and resorts, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. In April, Northwest Health, based in Springdale, announced it had joined the Mayo Clinic Care Network. The nation's top-rated medical center based in Rochester, Minnesota, has similar clinical partnerships in Florida and Arizona. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a number of Mayo descendants also have roots in Northwest Arkansas.
After emigrating to New York from Manchester, England in 1846, Dr. William Worrell Mayo established a medical practice along the upper Mississippi River in Rochester, Minnesota, under the stewardship of his two physician sons, William James Mayo and Charles Horace Mayo. The family frontier practice in the 1880s began to evolve, says Lily Mayo Wivoda.
Will and Charlie Mayo were not only siblings, but really, quite frankly, best friends. And they grew up with a conviction about medicine, which was giving back to others. And the best way to do that was through teamwork. They were boys when their parents mortgaged their home to buy a microscope that would improve quality care. They've traveled with their father. They grew up in medicine, just like farmers would grow up as sons with their fathers and learn the family business. I think one of our favorite stories about my great-grandfather, Dr. Charlie, was when his father was performing an operation on a farmhouse kitchen, the assistant actually passed out from the ether that he was administering to put the patient asleep. And Charlie, who was only 10, climbed up on a box to deliver the ether to save the patient's life. He literally stepped up and supported his father at the age of 10. So the concept of doing what's right for the patient is just completely ingrained in those boys.
The great-granddaughter of Dr. Charles Mayo and granddaughter of Dr. Chuck Mayo, Lily Mayo Wivoda, spoke to us from the studios of Mayo Clinic's sprawling medical campus in Rochester. Wivoda, born in 1962, started out at the Mayo Clinic as a paramedic, serving with a nonprofit for more than 30 years, most of that time within emergency medical services. Today, she plays a key role in the clinic's administration.
I was given a wonderful opportunity to be an operations administrator with the practice and worked with many departments and enjoyed them greatly. Got some opportunities to work on some complicated, large-scale problem-solving type activities, and I just loved it. It kind of brought me back to my old EMS days. So I've continued down that vein and enjoy working on complex problems and that we face in all forms of medicine. And I really enjoy the teams I get to work with.
Wivoda says founding patriarch Dr. William Worrell Mayo, who struggled to find his footing early on in his career, ended up in Rochester during the American Civil War after President Abraham Lincoln assigned him to be an examining surgeon for Union soldiers.
And then his wife said, "We're not moving anymore." That's how the practice started in Rochester. But what really made the hospital come into play was a natural storm that occurred. It was basically born out of a storm. In August of 1883, Will had just graduated and Charlie was still at home, a tornado hit and they began to treat the wounded. And through a partnership, William Worrell and Mother Alfred Mose founded the hospital. They worked together to create a hospital that would serve the community. The sisters provided the nurses, and Dr. Mayo provided the physicians.
Under the partnership, the Sisters of St. Francis, with Dr. William Worrell Mayo and his two sons, formally opened St. Mary's Hospital in 1889.
And it really was, at the time, antiseptic surgery was being discovered. And that was something they really took hold of and began to incorporate into what they did. It really made a difference in patient outcome. It was also, at the time, medical specialization was starting, and that became a core work of Mayo, is to understand at a specialized level diseases. Most doctors were working in solo practices, but the brothers trusted each other and welcomed other colleagues to come in, so they created a collegial environment with diverse skills, and that was really what set Mayo Clinic apart from other places. It was the era of when Henry Ford and John Rockefeller were building large, vertically integrated organizations. And actually, the Mayos applied that, similar principles of that type of engineering, but did it with the patient in the center. They traveled extensively throughout the United States and the world, seeking best practices and welcoming them to come to Rochester to learn about that, as well as learn from others. It was a very different environment than medicine had seen.
After William Worrell Mayo's death in 1911, his sons incorporated the Mayo Clinic as a nonprofit medical center 8 years later, donating their wealth to establish the Mayo Clinic Foundation.
Well, many people come to the clinic, obviously, for multiple reasons. And the great thing about the Mayo Clinic is that we can treat you from cancer to heart disease to transplant to the neurosciences. We have specialties that are extensive. The important thing I think we do here is we incorporate our research and our education in our practice. That's very important to us because we are training the next generation of medical providers. We have 5 schools of medicine here at the clinic. And to give you an idea of the scope, in 2017, our research and education funding exceeded $1 billion. And over half of that came from the Mayo Clinic and benefactors. The other half came from grants. We provide direct care for about 1.3 million people from all 50 states and about 136 countries in 2017.
Mayo Clinic's comprehensive diseases and conditions website is a popular place for the public to obtain reliable medical information online. And Mayo Clinic today operates a 70-hospital health system across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, with hospitals in Jacksonville, Florida, and Phoenix, Arizona.
By the 1980s, our U.S. population was increasing in the southern belts, and we had a longtime patient and benefactor, J.E. Davis, that lived in the Jacksonville area and really felt passionate about bringing Mayo's special skills down to where he lived. And that's about the time when we had the Jacksonville site come up, Mayo Clinic Jacksonville. And it was natural for us to start thinking about, are there other areas that would make sense to us? And we started looking at the Southwest, and we identified Scottsdale, Arizona, and Phoenix area to be the place we would think we could bring the most value to. The interesting sort of family tie to Arizona is Will and Charlie both enjoyed vacationing in Arizona, so it was really great to see that tie come back.
Mayo Clinic is also formally networked with dozens of health systems, hospitals, and clinics around the world, providing expert consultation and resources, most recently partnering with Northwest Health in Springdale, Arkansas.
We have about 40 members today in our Mayo Clinic Care Network, and Northwest Arkansas has now joined the family, which I cannot tell you how personally pleased I am to have that happen. My father lived in Arkansas for many years until his recent death about a year ago, and I can tell you I took every opportunity to come down and visit the wonderful state of Arkansas. So for me personally, I am extremely pleased that we have a presence in Arkansas.
A relative of Lily Wyvoda, who lives on the Ozarks and who declined being interviewed for this report, says a dozen Mayo descendants now live in Northwest Arkansas.
Well, on the Charles side, there's about 70 descendants to the fourth generation, which is my generation. They go from the brother, so about 70. It is a large family, a very diverse interests, but we're all bound by a heritage that empowers us to always do our best in whatever endeavor we put our minds to learning. One of the interesting things about the Mayo Clinic is the brothers never sought for personal fortune or fame. They regarded what they earned as the people's money, and they wanted it returned to society in the form of high-quality care. And they deeded everything back. The brothers and their wives in 1919 gave everything back to the clinic, including all the land, equipment, and most of their personal savings. They wanted it to advance their mission into the future. That gift actually was a great gift to the family because it allowed the family to know their own successes and failures, and that we were given the values and principles to model our lives by, and these values were reinforced by our families. We could be whatever we set our minds to becoming, no strings attached.
Among the nation's 5,000 hospitals, Wyvoda says the Mayo Clinic remains highly ranked.
The last 30-some years, as long as U.S. News and World Report has ranked hospitals, Mayo has been ranked at the top or near the top.
Mayo Clinic works with hundreds of insurance companies and is widely listed as an in-network provider, often not requiring a physician referral. All appointments are prioritized on the basis of medical need, according to the website. To be associated with the Mayo Clinic and family is a privilege, says Lily Mayo Wyvoda.
Proud is not the word I would choose. I am humbled by the opportunity to serve the Mayo Clinic. I get the great gift of coming to work every day alongside incredibly talented people who have a common mission of serving others. I am inspired by my incredible family, not only the famous brothers and their father, but all of my gifted family members who have chosen their own paths to make their mark in this world.
The history and legacy of the Mayo family is subject of a new documentary by Ken Burns titled The Mayo Clinic, Faith, Hope, and Science, airing this fall on PBS. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Mayo Clinic, Faith, Hope, and Science, a two-hour documentary by Ken Burns, will air on PBS on September 25th and 26th. This is Ozarks at Large. We move now to the Harold and Blanche Koch News Studio, where Timothy Dennis resides. How are you, Timothy?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Kyle?
Very good. Good to be back from a vacation and ready to hear about music we're going to have this week.
Let's start with tonight.
All right.
Stage 18 is going to have a solo blues show. Scott Leeper, he's a blues guy from Pittsburgh, Kansas. He started out playing the drums as a kid. He progressed to the washtub bass and then finally to guitar.
Gonna rock tonight with the banjo, fiddle, and the bow. Gonna sing a song to chase away the country blues. My dad farmed here his whole life. He worked real hard and he paid his dues.
Is he only doing guitar tonight?
I think he may be doing kind of a one-man band type thing. I'm not exactly sure, but he has played with the Ben Miller Band.
They're from the Joplin area, so that
exactly.
Makes sense.
That's going to be a $5 show at Stage 18, and music is supposed to get underway right around 8 o'clock.
Perfect.
Tomorrow night, Jeff Kearney is going to have a solo show at Kingfish in Fayetteville.
Does Jeff Kearney ever not play music? I mean, between all the different places that he can be in bands?
I don't know. Okay. I really don't know. Again, he's a guitarist from the One Ounce Jig and the Flip Off Pirates and several other bands throughout the region. By the way, One Ounce Jig will be at Crystal Bridges Saturday night as part of the Force Music Series. But his solo show, Jeff's solo show at Kingfish Thursday night, gets underway at about 8 o'clock.
All right.
Moving on to Friday, there's going to be a show at Smoke and Barrel Tavern featuring the Inner Party, White Mansion. Both of them are actually releasing EPs at this show.
We'll have Inner Party in the Furman Garner Performance Studio on Friday's show.
Yes, we will. At that show Friday night at Smoke and Barrel, they'll be joined by Crash Blossom. It's a $5 show from about 9:30 p.m. till about 2 a.m. Also Friday night, up the road in Springdale at Black Apple Crossing, there'll be a band called Le Cube, L-E-Q-U-B-E. I know that they're a Fort Worth-based indie rock band.
All right.
That show at Black Apple Crossing is going to be 8 to 10 p.m. Again, that's Friday night. Moving on to Saturday, Foggy Bobcat will be at Stage 18 in Fayetteville. Why did you bother? Why did you bother to change the way that you feel? So hard to explain. I know your reasons, they're never the same. It's just you're so right, it's all just a game. They are releasing a new album, kind of a double LP, which includes That Voodoo, which is from the studio, and then Almost Live, which is a live EP.
Now, if I can't make it to the show and I want to buy this EP, mm-hmm. where can I go to buy it?
Bandcamp. Which is an internet
But if I
webpage.
Want the physical copy in my hand?
Do you know how to burn CDs?
I'm just saying. It'd be great if someone had this little kiosk of local music available.
I don't know
if I've mentioned that before.
It sounds vaguely familiar,
okay.
Actually.
All right.
That show with Foggy Bobcat at Stage 18 has a $5 cover, and it begins at around 9 o'clock. Still in Fayetteville, Saturday night, Adam Fawcett returns to town.
Good for Adam. Too sharp to be my kind. The new king can't dance or nothing. His sad blood blue and gushing on hordes of ex-husbands. I tried to run years ago.
He will be at Backspace. He's back in town from Little Rock. He's going to be joined by locals Theta Theorem and May the Peace of the Sea Be With You. That is a $5 show at Backspace, and it begins at around 10 o'clock. Still in Fayetteville Saturday night, at Nomad's Music Lounge, there's going to be an indie rock show featuring locals Jettison Void and Terra Nova Kings. Show Nomads is from 7 to 11 p.m. Now, getting out of Fayetteville Saturday night, Emily Rowland is going to be at Core Public House in Rogers. She's one half of the local folk duo Melody Pond. That show at Core Public House in Rogers will be from 7 to 9 p.m. Then finally on Saturday night, Delta Phonic will be at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. Do you know about Delta Phonic?
You know, I should. It rings a bell, but I'm drawing a blank right now.
Well, they're not from the area. They're a New Orleans-based blues, funk, and roots rock duo. That show at Chelsea's has a $5 cover, and it should get away at around 9:30.
It's always a good time at Chelsea's.
Yeah, I agree.
It's been too long since I've been there, but
it has been for me as well. Yeah. But sometime soon.
Yes.
let's move on to Sunday. One of my favorite bands that I've had here in the studio is going to be back in the region. The Time Burners are coming back to town. Gonna take me on back home. On that long, winding road. Heading down the road every night.
wishing you were here by my side, looking for something that I may never find on that lawn.
They're a husband and wife rockabilly duo. They're great musicians and just good folks.
Yeah.
They're playing two shows Sunday, actually. From 9 a.m. to noon, they'll be at Ozark Mountain Bagel Company in Bentonville.
From 9 a.m. to noon?
Yeah, an early morning show.
Yeah.
And then they'll also be at Brick Street Brews in Rogers from 3 to 5 p.m.
Gosh, you can have 5 hours of the Time Burners.
I know.
You can burn some time with the Time Burners on Sunday.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. And then finally on Sunday, Sad Daddy will be at Brews in Eureka Springs.
All right. I love Sunday shows.
I do too. And it seems like they're getting to be more and more of them.
I like this idea of 9 to 12
I do
Sunday
too.
Morning. I
have
really
your,
do.
Have your breakfast, a little bit of coffee with a little bit of music.
There you go.
That show with Sad Daddy at Brews, again, will be from 3 to 6 p.m. And that's This Weekend in Music.
Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
On a mountainside where the river faces a big old sky, wide open spaces. Everything's so crowded, you just think it's gonna budge. And this big old iron world has turned to rust. This Texas town so dusty, I can barely breathe it all, and I hear the sound of the...
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society and the 20th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series completes the season with the Ted Ludwig Trio, featuring Joe Vick and Brian Brown, August 17th at the Haxton Road Studio in Bentonville. This composer showcase will present original compositions and arrangements. KUAF.com or digjazz.com for tickets.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums. Tomorrow on our show, how math and the simple act of counting something can have an influence on how we view our surroundings. An honors course this summer at the University of Arkansas combines landscape, architecture, and mathematics. And we'll tag along with students as they take a field trip to count things. Plus, a dramatic step up in neurology care in Northwest Arkansas, and a report on co-housing in the region. That's all tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. Bike sharing is officially coming to Fayetteville. Last night, the City Council in Fayetteville voted to approve a 3-year contract with an Indiana firm to provide a bike sharing program in the city. The project is scheduled to begin soon in September. To hear more about the program's infrastructure, you can search ozarksatlarge.com for the story Susanna Sitek prepared for our show earlier this summer. The Fayetteville Public Library is earning national recognition from the League of American Bicyclists. The 20,000-member organization is honoring the library with a silver-level bicycle-friendly business certification. About 1,300 businesses, companies, and agencies nationally have been given the designation. A long-term plan for another mobility issue in Fayetteville, public transit, begins to take shape in less than 2 weeks. Razorback Transit, operated by the University of Arkansas, and the nonprofit Ozark Regional Transit are working together to reduce redundancies, increase frequency of buses on some routes, and coordinate other routes. Beginning August 20th, the Washington Regional Hospital campus and the Walmart on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard will be exclusively serviced by Razorback Transit, freeing up buses for ORT to put on other routes. During peak times, Razorback Transit services will make a trip every 15 minutes to the Walmart on MLK, and on evenings and weekends, the route will be serviced every 40 minutes. Other changes include cutting the wait time on ORT's Route 3 that services Joyce Boulevard and the Northwest Arkansas Mall in half, and ORT plans to eliminate fares for exclusively Fayetteville routes. The changes are part of a plan to create an alternate transportation system in Fayetteville by 2030. Governor Asa Hutchinson is among state elected officials touring agricultural sites in the state this week. The governor touched on several agricultural issues Monday during a visit in Winthrop, Arkansas, including maintaining access to foreign markets for Arkansas farm goods. The governor says access is of concern in terms of retaliatory tariffs.
When I was in China this last year, Terry Branstad, who's the former governor of Iowa, and he is now our U.S. ambassador to China. He was smiling because for the first time, they opened up China to U.S. beef. And he says, I got a whole refrigerator full, actually a deep freeze full, of U.S. beef. And so that's pretty good whenever we have access to a global market. I went to Cuba.
And Governor Hutchinson says that during a visit to Cuba, after that country had diplomacy restored with the United States, he touted Arkansas goods such as rice, poultry, and other agricultural products.
And I was delighted whenever I returned within 1 week after I visited Cuba, they bought, I believe it was 4,500 tons of Arkansas poultry. We want to be able to keep those kind of markets open.
In all, the governor visited six different counties this week.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete. Back with us today, Morgan Scholes with Community Clinic. Morgan, thanks for coming back up around.
Pete, always great to be here. We've been serving Washington and Benton counties for over 20 years now. We've got 14 clinic locations. Wow. We serve over 36,000 Northwest Arkansas residents annually. We provide our services to all, regardless of their insurance status and regardless of their ability to pay. So we're really and truly serving those who may not have anywhere else to go and who truly need our services the most.
When you say that 36,000 within our community, it's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. I think that there's a misperception perhaps in Northwest Arkansas that because we are growing so exponentially, so is wealth for everyone. And along with the population growth, there is growth of the number of people in poverty. So mark your calendars. Okay. The week of August 12th through 18th, all across the country, community health centers and legislators and the government will be bringing focus to the important work that community health centers do in providing resources and services to those that need it most in their communities. So Community Clinic is having a celebration event on Tuesday, August the 14th at 10 a.m. in the Jones Center for Nonprofits in Springdale, Arkansas. We will be celebrating our 13th annual fundraiser in Siloam Springs on Friday, August 17th at 6:30 p.m. in the Brick Ballroom, incredible new venue in historic downtown Siloam Springs. And like I said, this will be our 13th year hosting this event, and it truly is an opportunity for us to honor those original founding volunteers who brought the vision to meet the need for healthcare in Northwest Arkansas and helped build and establish the robust service that we are today to our community. We will have, of course, incredible gourmet dinner catered by Marketplace Grill, wonderful beverages to offer, live music, and live and silent auctions. You can visit Community Clinic's Facebook page for a link to purchase a ticket online, or you can email info@communityclinicnwa.org.
Morgan Scholes with Community Clinic. Again, some important dates. Tuesday, August 14th, a celebration of community health, and that's taking place at the Jones Center in Springdale. And then Friday, the 17th, is the Friendraiser taking place in Siloam Springs.
That's
Thank
right.
you for telling us about it.
Thank you so much, Pete.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF, where local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Lee Wood, who is the host and producer of the KUAF Vinyl Hour. And I get to say this for the first time.
Yeah.
Saturday nights at 5 on 91.3. You talked about that with Antoinette last week while I was on vacation.
We did. We talked about the move over to FM. We talked about the change up in the schedule, too, on Saturday nights. Mm. So you can hear Wood songs, old time radio hour after Pick and Post now at 9 o'clock. And, of course, and then the Vinyl Hour at 5.
And this is all part of this happened because the folk sampler from Mike Flynn has ended production.
Correct.
We didn't cancel it or kick him off the air.
No,
it's just done.
Yeah, he retired the show.
Yeah.
So very exciting. And you know, I've been talking and trying to do some explaining about what the Vinyl Hour is. I mean, it's kind of one of those things. I was talking to Antoinette about how once you make a show all the time, you don't when people ask you about it, it's kind of hard to articulate sometimes. But yes, that it's a show with lots of different genres of music
where music really is like the vehicle for having a conversation with someone about their life or their interests or a particular time or place, things like that.
Right.
So this week's is so interesting to me. Jerry Stiles is my co-host, and he brought a box of records he bought at an estate sale 15 years ago.
All right.
And these are 45s that used to live in the George's Majestic Lounge jukebox. We're thinking in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s.
Early 80s, then I contributed some coins to this jukebox.
Yes.
Late 70s, not so much.
So that is so exciting. I mean, I kept, as we were going through, it's, and I'll post pictures on our Facebook page, but obviously they're the 45s, and then on the sleeves is handwritten in pencil, Majestic, and then often there is the label from the jukebox in the sleeve. And I kept thinking about being there, you know, trying to put myself there back then and selecting some of these songs. So we're listening to a lot of Arkansas artists, Johnny Cash, Charlie Rich, Glenn Campbell, that kind of thing.
And these are all on 45s.
All on 45s. This is all 45. And you can hear it. These records got a lot of play. And I don't know if maybe being in a jukebox means that they get beat up a little bit more than normal. You can hear, there's static and crackles on these. I love it. I mean, they're authentic. And there's definitely an Arkansas and then a Memphis, too. Like, we have Carla Thomas from Stax. And
gosh, this sounds amazing.
It's so cool. And Jerry has such an interesting story. I mean, this is neat that he knew the estate sale of this woman that she used to own George's. So he went on purpose to get it. Jerry's from Fayetteville, and he purposely picks Sunday Morning Coming Down because he took over that program that was a longtime program on KXUA.
The student-run station
Sundays at noon. So there's a lot of connections for Jerry and his life and also the history that's in these records.
Well, right? I mean, yeah. Just right.
And so cool. And then also thinking about where are these machines? You know, it's one of those things about technology and progress is that we move on to something else. Internet jukeboxes are the thing now. There's the 45s can be found. They're around. But where are the machines? Where are the jukeboxes? I mean, we came up with an elaborate fantasy that we were going to go find all of them because what interesting machines and what a part of our experience that we don't really have anymore.
Right. For better or for worse.
I would say for worse.
I would too.
But that's me. But it's a great, look back at Fayetteville's history. We talk a lot about establishments in Fayetteville and the music that was important there. Jerry's got great stories. He's a Fayetteville guy. It's a really nice, fun hour.
He doesn't have the records that were in the Maxine's jukebox, does he?
No, but I am doing some sleuth work.
Okay.
Try to track them down.
All right. Because I'd love to hear that Misery and Gin 45.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
From Merle Haggard.
Yeah.
All right. Saturday evening 5 on 91.3.
Yes.
Sunday at 5 still on KUAF 3.
Yes.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Kyle.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet, threw my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt. Then I washed my face and combed my hair and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day.
A pair of new exhibitions will open September 1st at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville. Amy Sherald will allow visitors to view a collection of paintings by the artist who created the official portrait of former First Lady Michelle Obama that's still drawing big crowds. And in conversation, Will Wilson and Edward Curtis will offer patrons a chance to see different depictions of Native Americans and to think critically about how they have been portrayed in photography over the past century. In this reminder, The Beyond, Georgia O'Keeffe and Contemporary Art, featuring over 30 of Georgia O'Keeffe's artworks, along the work of 20 contemporary artists exploring similar themes, will close on September 3rd.
Brian Brown fled his California home when fire threatened.
A police officer pulls down there. He then yells at us, "Get out now!" and there's three helicopters right above our house ready to drop water.
I'm Ari Shapiro. With record-setting wildfires in California, we'll ask, is there a better way to fight them? Weighing the options for fighting fires this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today, beginning at 3 on 91.3. All Things Considered can be heard every weekday afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF. And don't forget Ozarks at Large, which, yes, can be heard every weekday from noon to 1 and 7 to 8 p.m. on 91.3, is also available on your schedule. We do have a podcast version of our show that allows you to listen to us when you want on your iPhone or computer. It's a free sign-up through services like iTunes, Stitcher, and Apple TV. Also, you can find the most recent editions of Ozarks at Large through the absolutely free KUAF app that's downloadable for many smartphones and tablets. And past editions of our shows, plus individual stories and interviews, are available at ozarksatlarge.com. Also at ozarksatlarge.com are links to some of the stories that you hear on our show, as well as ways to share those stories and interviews with friends through social media or email. That's all available at ozarksatlarge.com. Congratulations to four Bentonville Pride members who will be spending their Thanksgiving holiday in New York City performing as members of the Macy's Great American Marching Band at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, the 92nd annual. That will take place in November in New York City. Samantha Petch, Allie Abide, Ariel Trimble, and Caton Little, congratulations. All right, this is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Prairie Grove. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new show. Thanks, as always, for taking some time out to listen to our program. We're going to end with music from one of our favorite bands, Fetz Folly, that was recorded exclusively for us in the Carver Center for Public Radio. They will be performing at the Gully Park Summer Concert Series Thursday night at Gully Park in Fayetteville. That begins at 7. On Friday night, they'll be at JJ's Grill Prairie Creek. Saturday, they'll be at JJ's Grill Rogers. They're all over the place through August and September. You can find out more at FetzFolly.com or at their Facebook page. This is Fetz Folly and the song Getting Home.
My sweet baby, don't you let those teardrops fall. I'm coming home real soon. It's been so long since I have held you in my arms, and it's got me feeling blue. It's been 8 hard weeks on a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home to you. Every night I'm dreaming of your pretty face, neath the moonlit summer sky. And if I had my way, I would run away right now and be with you tonight. It's been 8 hard weeks on a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home to you. It's been 8 hard weeks on a long and lonely road, hurting in my heels, aching in my soul. Not sure how I'll make it through. This much is true. Girl, I best be getting home.